You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to the second half of our UFC 258 post-fight coverage here on MMAfighting.com. We are not done just yet. It is time for you to join us in reacting to UFC 258. Kamaru Usman, still the UFC welterweight champion. Spectacular performance. Just a fun night of fight. It delivered. Not a lot of hype going in, but it's a pretty damn fun pay-per-view. Pretty damn fun card from start to finish. Had some hiccups and speed bumps along the way, but I think we all came through it. Better people. And thank you for joining us. I am Mike Heck. Alex Cayley, the Prince of Positivity, is here. Back in our lives. There he is.
I'm here.
Duval!
Shout out to Duval.
Shout out to Duval. And E. Casey Lydon back here on the other side. We just heard from Alexa Grasso and Dana White and Kamaru Usman, even Gilbert Burns, even Bruce Buffer on the post-fight press conference stream. So hope you guys enjoyed that. It went for a while, but now we're here. And listen, we don't have much prepared. You guys, this is your show, okay? This is your post-fight show. Whatever you want to talk about for the next 30 or so minutes, we're going to get to all of that. But before we do, we'll have these questions come in. We got Casey's reaction to the main event. We got my reaction to the main event. We haven't gotten AK's reaction to the main event on these streams yet. Kamaru Usman, AK, overcame a little adversity. Gilbert Burns dropped him early in the fight, hurt him, had him in some big trouble. But he stayed composed, calm, cool, and collected, and then he just took over the fight as soon as the second round began. What did you think of the Nigerian Nightmare's title defense tonight?
Look, we talked about what it would take for Usman to kind of get to that next level of popularity. And this fight, I mean, I'm sure he wished it was a little bit easier, but as far from a entertainment and narrative standpoint, it couldn't have played out any better. We got to see him face adversity. You know, that's something that that made George St. Pierre's run so intriguing, was that there, even though he was so dominant in some of those fights, there was always that sense of vulnerability. You know, there was always like, Thiago Alves has got that Muay Thai explosive, you know, knockout power, great jiu-jitsu. Maybe he can catch George. Jake Shields is a great grappler. Maybe he's the grappler that can out-grapple, you know, GSP. So Usman was missing that a little bit. You know, that dominance can almost detract from, so if you're not finishing, you know, if you're dominating but not finishing, then the doms can almost detract from the interest in your fights. So the Colby Covington fight, that was obviously a great one. That was huge. That was huge for his reputation. And then this fight, early struggles, comes back, shows his toughness, takes a lot of hard shots, and then gets a really exciting finish. And really no controversy, you know, just clearly outlasts and outclasses Gilbert Burns, you know. So I think it was a great main event. Great showcase for Usman. So this was kind of a one fight card on paper for a lot of people, but at least that one fight did what it was supposed to do and showcased not just Usman, but I think Burns also came out looking great as well. So it was a really, really, really nice welterweight championship fight.
There's just like an emotional set of circumstances, like all around, yes. Like super intense at the beginning. Like they didn't even wait for like the referee instructions to get into each other's faces. And then like after every round, they were like in each other's faces, and then the fight was over, and it was just like heartbreak everywhere. It was just so raw. It was crazy.
I just remembered Herb Dean when they faced off. He's like, excuse me. I got to get in.
It was wild.
It was great. I was like, ooh, they're going to fight. It was good.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Leave your questions, your thoughts, your comments on the card, and we're going to start firing these things off. All right. And get right after it.
Go to me, fix this side.
Great card. So that's not a question, but I do want to address that. You know, the whole time I was watching, I shouldn't care because, like I said, you know, we do this professionally, so it's different for us than how fans do it. But the whole time I was wondering, I was thinking it was a good card. Is the card worth $70? But then I was comparing it to other, like, you know, solid fight night cards, and I'm like, I don't know how people measure the value. Is it again in a quality main event, which they got, exciting finishes? They certainly got those today. There was some really good. There were actually a few good back and forth fights, including the main event and even fights that ended in the first round. There was some exciting ones, like
and a potential submission of the year.
Of an end of submission of the year. Yeah, it's funny. I'm still hesitant to call it a great card. I don't know. I'm not sure what else I could have asked for, but $70. Yeah, I don't know. $70. Was it worth people's hard-earned shekels? I think it delivered. I don't know if I would call it a great card, but yeah, I think it was worth your money. If you paid for this pay-per-view, I don't think you're disappointed.
It's hard to say great card when you say $70, because one pay-per-view from now in a couple of weeks, yeah, that's also $70.
Yes.
You know? And you look at that card and you look at this card, while I mean, just the name value and what the next pay-per-view, what it means for everything as far as so many divisions, and even the prelims or the fights matter as far as like next, you know, top contenders. But if 70 bucks ain't nothing to you, it is a great card. It was.
Right. That's kind of what I'm saying. It did feel – I saw a lot of kind of snarky comments, you know, during that, like, oh, this is a really great fight night card. And, like, I kind of rolled my eyes, but then I'm like, you know what? This is – a lot of this stuff is stuff that we've seen on fight night cards, which is a good thing and a bad thing, by the way. That kind of speaks to the high quality that some of the fight cards that we get these days. There's some really, really good ones that used to be pay-per-views, like, you know, 15 years ago. And it also speaks to, again, kind of how many cards there are and how indistinguishable they are from pay-per-view. So when a pay-per-view comes around, it does feel like a fight night. You almost can't tell the difference. So, you know, pros and cons. It's really a glass half full, glass half empty situation. It kind of, like you said, it depends on how you felt about spending $70 and doing it again in a few weeks for a card that's more stacked.
Yeah, it's going to be it's 3 weeks between 257 and 258. 3 weeks or 2 weeks or 21 days from right now, we'll have 259. And then 3 weeks after that, we'll have 260 with the heavyweight title on the line. So, yeah, it's going to be pretty wild. Yeah. Let's see. Joseph Bosa didn't like some of Kamaru's scrum. I hate the call out of Jorge. Jorge had to kill himself to make 170, lost 20 pounds in 4 days. I think Wonder Boy should get the title shot. What are your thoughts on that, AK? Because Casey and I were talking earlier. Kamaru Usman, obviously, big winner tonight. But second on the big winner list was Jorge Masvidal. To have your name called out on the broadcast after he won that fight, that was a gift from the heavens for him, was it not?
Who wants to see this? Shout out in the comments if I'm crazy here and you guys are really dying to see, you know, a proper Masvidal Usman rematch. If that first fight left a lot of unanswered questions, Usman framed it himself. There are some fair points. Masvidal did have to take the fight on short notice. Obviously, he wasn't as well prepared as he would have been. And I do think a fight between them, if they fought again, it would play out differently. I don't think it's unfair to say that Masvidal's performance would be a little bit better getting off the cage, you know, dealing with the grappling, you know, creating some more scramble situations, you know, stuff like that. It would be different. But so different that I need to see it again, like, next? No, maybe somewhere down the road. You know, we're at this point where I think we've talked about the welterweight division a lot as being a little bit stuck, where guys just don't want to take fights because they don't want to lose their positions. But at some point, someone has to fight their way back to the line. I think Masvidal is one of those people. I don't think he's such a box office draw that he can just hold out for another shot at Usman or even be one fight away. I think it depends who he fights, I guess, but he's maybe one or two fights away. So I don't know. Yeah, I agree with Joe Spoza that I don't know if Usman did the right thing. But at the same time, there's not that many names at 170 pounds immediately jumping to my mind that need to get a shot. Yeah.
So he didn't do the best thing, but there wasn't really a better option either.
Yeah. I'm amazed. I'll say this. This is a bit of a spoiler because the reason I'm kind of dancing around this case is because it's a bit of a spoiler for I think a column I'm end up writing in the next couple of days. But he should have just jumped on the Khabib bandwagon and done that call out. He should have said something like, oh, look, I know Dana and him are still talking. I know he hasn't said he wants to come back. But if he's looking for that something special or that something spectacular, you know, I gave him that something spectacular tonight. So maybe Khabib comes back for me and gives me that chance to be the one in 29 and one. Something. You know what I mean? Like, again, it's an unrealistic call out. But it for me, it would make just as much – it's a more exciting call out than calling for Masvidal, which is –
I think Usman would get crap too. It's like, oh, what, you caught out a retired 55er? Ugh. You know, it's like I think there's a lot of lose, and I don't think there's a perfect call out. to be honest with. And this is the UFC's fault for not because we talked about how the welterweight division has been so kind of stuck, I guess. And we got some movement finally at the top, but still right underneath, it's still the same. We still, and the whole tough thing, like, oh God, what do you think about that, huh? AK,
having look. I've said it already. I hate taking fighters like contenders and putting them as coaches on the show and putting them on the shelf for like 9 months as they got to film the show. They have to wait for the show to air. I love The Ultimate Fighter, but anyone who's campaigning for like, oh, I really want to see Usman and Masvidal. I really want to see two guys who should be active. Clearly, these people have not watched the show in like 10 seasons because it's honestly no. And I get it. These guys are great personalities. You might get something better out of it, but the upside is just not that high. The ratings might be probably a bit better than average than the last few seasons. You know, there'd be that buzz of like, oh, The Ultimate Fighter's back. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So you add that plus some stars. Obviously, look, the ratings would be better than they've been. But at the same time, it's like it takes up so much of these guys' time. I just wish they would call in like coaches who are better at TV, bring in Chael Sonnen, bring in a Matt Serra, stuff like that. I get it. You don't get as much casual interest, but the show would be better. And again, the ratings at some point aren't just going to like fall back down anyway. I know that's kind of a cynical thing to say, but so no, I don't like it. I hate the idea of tying these guys up with The Ultimate Fighter.
All right, let me respond to this whole thing. One, from Please. What I understand, the plan is to film The Ultimate Fighter in March. That's like the hope. They were supposed to do it in January. Things got pushed back, obviously, because of the pandemic. So I don't mind it. I also don't mind the call out. I actually think it's a pretty brilliant call out for a lot of the reasons you guys mentioned. It forces these guys, like the Covingtons, like these other guys who aren't jumping on these opportunities to take fights. It forces them to have to do that now. Like, if you're going to get a shot at the belt, like, now you're forced to. Like, you can't wait for a title shot. Usman just said, you know what? I'm going to make the most money I can with this opportunity, with unanswered questions. I'm going to make the job easier. And now these guys can just fight it out and earn that next shot. No one's done that right now. There are options, but no one's done that. So if I'm Usman, and he's probably going to be a pretty sizable favorite in that fight. Like, let's be honest, it's a very winnable fight for him and probably makes him the most money possible. And he seems pretty tapped into things. Like, the Khabib call out would have been cool, but I think he understands, like, it would be kind of a groaning thing and leave Khabib alone. I think it knows what's going on. And then if he called out GSP, still kind of the same thing. Like, he sees, like, when you ask him about it, he's got an answer, but he's not going to sit there and be like, hey, GSP, you took everything I work for, MF-er. I'm the man. I'm the best welterweight in the world. Like, he saw what happened when Tyron Woodley tried to do that, and it didn't work. It actually, like, dropped his stock a little bit. It made people sort of turn against him. And I think Usman's playing the smart. I actually thought it was the right call out. Meritocracy rise, maybe not, but at least it gets the division moving forward. That's the biggest problem right now. There's just no movement. The welterweight division has lost so much value since Usman beat Masvidal in July because no one's fighting.
That I forgot that the first Usman Masvidal fight it was a pretty successful pay-per-view.
Very successful.
I believe, I'm just looking here, reported 1.3 million.
Yeah,
it was a stacked card. It was a stacked card. Volkanovski Holloway was also on there. Piotr Jan Aldo, Rose, and Jessica Andrade, Paige VanZant was on there. So it was a loaded card. But yes, obviously the Masvidal interest drew a lot of that. I don't know, but now that people have seen it, I bet it would do less than 1.3. Maybe probably still crack a million, which I guess makes it worth doing. Especially if you're Usman and you're banking on getting those pay-per-view points. But man, I just don't like it. But you're right. Can I think of someone who would also, like right now, who he could fight that would draw at welterweight that would draw a million? Nate Diaz, maybe. Obviously, yeah, Conor McGregor, but I mean, that doesn't count. So yeah. If you want to look at it from that way.
I think what's also not talking about, I think it's very important. I think Usman needs to face Masvidal again and finish him and beat him decisively. And that will be the way he finally, people put respect in his name. Because right now he still is like, snooze man. You fought that one boring fight one time, remember? Oh, I ignore the really exciting fights, but remember that one time you fought the boring fight? Snooze man, get it? It kind of sounds like Usman, but snooze, and snooze means sleeping, you know?
Oh, funny. No, I get it.
Yeah, so in case you didn't get it, snooze man, and it rhymes, kind of, it's like a thing.
It's good.
So,
that's good.
I really think, because watching Kamaru speak, like, he's one of those guys, like, and I think Dana likes this. Dana doesn't like how many pay-per-views he sells, but I think Dana likes this in fighters. He definitely fights with a chip on his shoulder. Like, you could tell, like, I don't care about stats. I don't care about if I beat GSP. But what I do care about is all these, I'm not in the pound-for-pound list. I'm not number one. Or, you know, I'm not, you know, people are still doubting. Even though people aren't doubting him, he feels like they're doubting him. And I still think that Usman, that Masvidal fight really bothers him, because he really wanted to put a serious hurting on him. And yeah, that's why I do like that fight. Although it doesn't make sense. I get it, but yeah, whatever.
The foot stomps, though.
Fighter of the year.
My 2020 fighter of the year.
Who's the 2021 fighter of the year right now?
I mean, clearly he's the front runner, and I don't see anyone passing him.
Dustin Poirier.
Yeah. Dustin Poirier.
I can't wait to see what the reported buy rate for tonight's card is. Any estimates? Any ideas? Estimates? What do you guys think?
Okay,
under 500,000. Unfortunately,
under 500. I'd be shocked if it hits 500.
Way under. That's what I'm saying. You just said 1.7 million, and
1.3 million. 1.3 million.
Sorry, 1.3 million. Yeah. And we're being very positive in saying 500,000. You know, so yeah. That's a lot. Oh no, my updates came up. Box updates.
It's gonna be tough. I mean, especially like you guys said, people are aware that there are bigger pay-per-views coming up. So you just logically would budget, and you might see this card and on paper say, well, this is the one. This is the one I'm gonna skip. Maybe if you even thought that Usman was gonna win another round decision, you just kind of, okay, well, I'm gonna skip this one. So I think maybe 250-ish range, 250,000,
250,000. With the FBI out there, after all the streamers and illegal streamers,
I got Joseph Boza saying 500, 600 at most. MMA, our good friend MMA Vodgers saying 750K. If this hits 750K, Usman is a star. If this somehow hits 750K, let me tell you something. There's no more talk of Usman a star. Usman is definitely a star if it hits 750K. That's a big, that's like John Jones, BJ Penn, Anderson Silva after the Chael Sonnen fight range. Yeah, I don't know if you're making that.
John Jones versus Daniel Cormier 2, with all that heat, did not sell a million pay-per-views. It was like 900,000. So 750 for this card. Good Lord, that'd be impressive.
A lot of Alexa Grasso fans out there.
It's just the timing of it. That's all. Like, you're just,
I get it. Yeah.
It's not that it was a bad card. It's sandwiched in between two mega cards.
It's
true.
Who in the top 10 makes sense for Alexa Grasso?
We're doing our show now. Come on.
Casey this one. Okay. Casey will answer this question. I will just say that I will answer it. I already know who it is. This is too easy. This might be the easiest pick out of all of them.
I got. I got to do a quick look at the rankings real quick.
Me too. I'm doing that right now. I actually had not. I got a lot of suggestions sent. Oh, you know, Mike, we get a lot of suggestions anyway. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, she called her. It was a very polite call out. I saw it on the Twitters. Caitlin Chikayang called out Grasso and suggested, why don't we knuckle up? So that's an interesting fight, but if she wants to fight someone coming out, Caitlin's coming off a win. I don't know if the UFC, UFC does weird matchmaking. I don't like that match, because if Caitlin does beat Grasso, it just stalls the division, because Chikayang is not getting a title shot. I think it has to be, I think Grasso has to fight someone that could potentially still fight for a title. So maybe Cynthia Calvillo?
Wrong answer.
Geez. Oh, man.
If they book it, I'm fine, but that's not the right answer.
Go ahead.
Vivian Wright.
That's what I say. I saw Vivian Araújo an option.
How do you say her name? I got to figure out her name.
Araújo.
Araújo.
Araújo. Araújo, sure. Close enough.
There's your answer. I'm pointing to it.
Okay. Oh, you think so?
I'm into that.
That is the fight.
Is that kind of who she is at this point? You have to beat her if you want to fight Shevchenko?
And it's, listen, Jessica is a fine fighter. She gets in there and fights.
She is.
But I will guarantee you, if this is the fight that it's made, the second this fight is booked and we confirm it and we put it on our website, everyone is going to immediately be an Alexa Grasso fan. Immediately. She will get buzz right off the bat for this fight.
Yeah.
And these are the kinds of matchups that she needs right now. Like, you don't want to rush her. You don't want to throw her up there. Like, I think Ai's number 8 right now? Something like that, 7 or 8? I think that's perfect. Next step.
I'm not sure about that. I don't go by the real rankings, but yeah.
Yeah, she gets the rub from Jessica Ai. I mean, look at Joanne Calderwood. Like, Calderwood's a fun fighter. People like her, but she got a lot of fans punching Jessica in the face. I mean, it's just the way that it is. It's whether it's fair or not, that's just the way that it is. So I think that's a good, sensible step for her. You fight Jessica Ai, it's instant gratification for the fans, and then it's onwards and upwards from there. Not saying she'll just go in there and win, but the risk and reward, I think, in potential star power or, you know, whatever you can get from that, I think that's probably the best step for her in order to get to where she wants to go. I like that, without rushing her.
Can we answer this? Who's next for Barbara? Is that something you talk about on your podcast, or can we?
It depends. We have a wild card option, but I don't know. I don't know if Barbara. Maybe I would. Maybe I would. Just looking at the rankings here.
Do we find? Go on.
Montana De La Rosa. I don't know. I think she's booked though. Maybe. Gian Kim. Molly McCann.
I kind of like the Molly McCann idea.
Sure. I could see that. Yeah.
That would be fun. That'd just be a fun scrap.
That'd make a lot of sense. Yeah. It'd be a fun scrap. Again, and this is all learning period for Missy Barber. All right. They have to be very careful with how they develop her, because I do think they could have done a better job with Sage Northcutt. I think they could have done a better job with Paige VanZant. Chase Hooper, I think they could do a better job with. Though maybe he shouldn't even be in the OC.
Whoa.
Sean O'Malley, I think they did right. Sean O'Malley actually did a really good job, I will say, of the young prospects, booking them with the right opponents. I think Sean O'Malley did about as good a job as they could. But a lot of these young guys, the UFC is not a good place for young fighters to develop. It just isn't. It's just a proven fact. A lot of their sort of designated, you know, blue chippers, they don't really know how to handle them, and they put them in bad situations that actually hurt their development instead of helping them. So I would like to see her take a step back, yeah, and fight someone like Molly McCann, who is a very tough, very good fighter, but rankings wise, you know, around I think where Macy should be right now.
I think that's a fight Molly would like too.
Mm-hmm.
I think her fighting style, I think that's a fun fight. But now that Barber, I think we can kind of shelve the whole, is she going to be the youngest UFC champ ever? I think we're now past that. You know, that was a nice little fun thing to talk about for a while. But do you even start Barbara Macy, her coaches in the UFC, do you even go even farther back and just almost start her, it's their first fight in the UFC, and just whoever the UFC matchmakers think is the worst flyweight, book her against her? Or do we, how much do you think the UFC and Dana are in the Macy Barbara business?
Bring in a contender series person or something, or bring in maybe someone from Invicta who's not a standout from Invicta, but someone who has that kind of experience, right? They don't believe in tune-up fights in the UFC, though. They really do not like tune-up fights at all. And sometimes that strategy pays off, sometimes it doesn't. But in a case of this kind of young prospect, I agree. There should be fighters that they should keep around just for kind of to really help some of their chosen ones kind of bounce back. But yeah, I think actually, that's a really good idea, but I don't see that happening. I think they are going to give her another tough test.
Big question. I think she's going to get Andrea Lee.
Barber?
Wow, that's tough.
That'd be Barber coming off two losses going against someone coming off 3 losses, even though Andrea Lee.
Yeah.
I actually like that fight. Man, I just really feel very bad for whoever loses that fight, because that is just a massive losing streak in the UFC. So, all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know if they tune her up.
Jocelyn Edwards.
All right,
Jocelyn Edwards, go back down to 125. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
What'd you think of the Miley Cyrus call out?
We talked about Tremendous. This on Slack a little bit.
We did. Well, I'll say it's like, I think it's a great song choice, but Julian Marquez has been all week. He's been super gassed up that he was going to come out to the Heart of Glass cover of the Blondie classic by Miley Cyrus, which is fine. It's a solid cover, but I mean, it's nothing compared.
I disagree. I'm a big Miley Cyrus fan. I don't like that. Yeah. I don't like that cover because it sounded more like just a karaoke version of it.
It's not that different.
It's not that different. A cover has to be. You have to reinvent the song. It's either a different genre, or different mood. It literally sounded like the same exact song as if it was Blondie playing and she was doing guest vocals. So that's why I didn't like it too much.
Yeah, I'm not okay. So I'm not crazy then. Everyone's telling me like, "Oh, this Heart of Glass cover is sick," and I'm like, "It's fine. It's good." But yeah, it's not. I would rather listen to the original. Debbie Harry is a friggin' classic. But the call out itself, the Julian Marquez, everything that Julian Marquez's post fight was hilarious. He was campaigning. He was doing some campaign. So your city can be the one that hosts some event or something. That was great. And then he prefaced the Miley Cyrus comment with like, "I've been waiting 30." He really had been waiting 31 months. You know, he hadn't fought in 30 months, hadn't won in longer than that. And he's like, "I'm waiting this long to do this all out, and here we go. Miley Cyrus, will you be my Valentine?" I thought it was hilarious. Gosh, in a perfect world, he gets some sort of response from her. I'm not sure if she handles social media or someone else does, but please, someone acknowledge Julian Marquez because I thought it was great.
And I was a little upset because I was like, why are you not walking out to Wrecking Ball? But then he informed us in his post-fight scrum, he actually already walked out to Wrecking Ball when he knocked out Phil Haas. So I was like, I didn't realize that. That changes everything.
He did? They had walkout songs for Contender Series?
Maybe for the Darren Stewart fight. Maybe the his
UFC debut. He said he's walked out to it before. So I just didn't realize it.
I can believe that.
I was like, all right. He likes to change. He likes a different walkout song each time. So I was like, all right.
He hasn't walked a party in the USA yet, has he?
So he's waiting title Dude. Fight. He's waiting for a title fight. Yeah.
As soon as there's people back, you have to walk out to that
in Strikeforce? Derek Brunson. I don't care who you are.
That song plays. If that song plays anywhere, you're dancing to it. You are. I don't care who you are. You can make fun of it right now, but if you go to a wedding and that song plays, you're getting up there and you're probably going to sing every word to it. Don't lie to yourself. What else we got?
So don't hide, Miley. Don't hide from Marquez. All right, don't duck Marquez.
A lot of matchup questions, guys.
Why is it so easy to matchmake for everyone except Leon? He's not going to get the title shot, and frankly, I don't want him to wait for Wonder Boy. So here's what I said on the – I don't know if you were watching the post-fight stream, a.k.a. the press conference. If I am Leon Edwards, I'm literally spending every waking moment on social media calling out Nate Diaz and nobody else. That's the guy. If you want a guy – he says he wants to come back in March or April – wants to fight a guy on a long winning streak that's winning, wants to do it 170 pounds. If I am Leon Edwards, I am screaming from the rooftops. And then after I scream from that rooftop enough, I'm going to the next rooftop and I'm singing Nate Diaz's name again. That's what you got to do. You fight, you scramble for that fight. Cause I don't think Colby Covington's going to take it. And Wonder Boy can't fight till May. And Leon wants to stay on the March 13th card. He hasn't fought in forever. You call for Nate. And you just keep calling for him over and over again. You poke at the bear and hopefully he signs. What do you think?
No, I agree with that. But I also agree with the question. Like, I just want to like acknowledge the question. Why is it so easy to match for everyone except him? I mean, okay, well, look. So Mike is saying call for a Diaz fight because Diaz is almost sort of beyond the rankings at this point. He fights so sporadically. And I don't think Diaz cares whether he's fighting someone on a one fight losing streak, six fight win streak. Diaz doesn't care. He would just want a name or something that's intriguing. That's going to generate fan interest and put money in his pocket. And Mike, you're right. With the right effort, Edwards could be that opponent. He could be that opponent. I'm still furious with the UFC that they completely dropped the ball after the Masvidal scuffle. That is one of their biggest mistakes. We'll never know how they didn't put that fight together. Maybe it was out of the control. Maybe Masvidal didn't want it. Maybe Edwards didn't want it. I don't know why they wouldn't, but that was money right there. So a Diaz fight would have that kind of intrigue as well, I suppose. They'd have to build up a little bit of trash talk. But why it's so hard to book him? He's on an 8-fight win streak. Nobody wants to risk losing their spot to him. And also, he's the kind of guy, he makes people look bad. He makes his opponent look bad. He's not going to get into brawls. He's not. He doesn't get into fights where it's like, it's like competitive fights. Nah, he's very technical, very enjoyable to watch from that sense. But from a casual standpoint, he's not bringing a lot of eyeballs to your fight. And he's probably just going to make you're probably just catching an L. So, I mean, again, that's one reason. And it doesn't help. He himself has been a little bit picky with his opponents as well. So add all that together and you have a guy who, again, hasn't fought in well over a year, despite being on an 8-fight win streak.
The problem is there's just no movement at all. There's none. Mm-hmm. Covington Woodley, outside of Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal last year, that was the biggest fight at welterweight. And that was just kind of like that's a fight that didn't need to happen. It didn't need to happen. Like, it was just like one of those fights. It's kind of like the way I view the Dillashaw-Uriah Faber idea. Like, it doesn't need to happen. But if you're going to do it, like, you have to do it now or it doesn't make sense. And by the way, from if you've been following social media and following ESPN shows, people in the know, the UFC is talking about TJ Dillashaw versus Uriah Faber. And if they book that, that is like the check the tapes championship of the world right there.
You're going to be in all the countdown shows. It's going to be like this, like Mike Hack, but like a really weird filter on you,
Yeah.
You're familiar with those, AK. When they take your audio and just put a scary photo of you.
We should replace we don't need a live feed of me. Like, I should make my just a frozen image of the one they use in the Dana White video. I see one comment from the guy named Mocked who says, LOL, people were commenting Duval on Luke Thomas's chat the other day. He was so confused. So, guys, I love Luke Thomas, but if you do watch the streams, hit him up with some, keep that Duval coming. Keep hitting him with those Duvals.
Luke Thomas, I know he doesn't want this out there, but guy loves Nabisco. He talks about, death metal. I love Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah.
He just wants that.
Secretly?
Ask him to show his back tattoo. Right at the very bottom of his back, it says, it says Fred Durst for life. It's crazy.
Casey, you can't tell people that. You guys work. You can't tell people that.
It's late night. No one is.
Oh, pissed. My God. Yeah, who's watching?
Who's watching?
Man. Unbelievable. Everyone's going to start tagging him. He's never going to come on between the links. Good God.
By the way, Dana White kind of shouted out Duval tonight because he was saying he was doing his thing where I only want to host live, sellout shows. And he's like, hopefully this year we can have sellout shows in either Las Vegas or Florida. And obviously by Florida, he meant Jacksonville. Shout out to Duval.
What else we got? We'll take a couple more.
Yeah. He didn't quite say it, but obviously that was implied.
I lost the question.
I saw someone asking while you're looking for this one. Was the stoppage late? Early in the main event? No.
It was either
right on time, or if you want it like maybe even a little bit late, if you want to be honest. But I actually thought Herb Dean did a good job, by the way. I'm not gonna
Yeah, it was a proper stoppage. It was he gave Burns the respect he deserved. If that's like an amateur fight or a prelim, he probably gets stopped a little earlier. But Herb Dean recognized the significance of the fight and recognized the years of the fights and whatever for training and everything for Burns to get that situation, and he had earned that ass kicking. So no issues with it.
I also see a comment about Rodolfo Vieira, and I just want to say quickly, guys, go back to our preview show. Go back to our preview show and watch that. We all said, man, but we think that Vieira could lose this fight if he's a really muscular, explosive guy, and we've seen grapplers like him in the past who get tired and then get finished late or lose decisions. We all said it. We all said it. We all agreed, like, yeah, that could definitely happen. And then, guys, just our picks, we do picks internally. None of us picked Hernandez, even though we clearly outlined how we thought he could win. None of us had the guts to pick him. So very, very embarrassing on our part, but amazing performance by Hernandez. Sorry, what was that question, Casey?
Yeah, it was a great performance. It was awesome.
That was so good.
During that fight, when the tide was turning, and once Rogan like calmed down, I was just screaming head kick. I was like, get the 50K knockout. And then why is he going to the ground of him? Why is he going on the ground? But obviously Mr. Fluffy Hernandez felt something in there, saw something in there that we did not see. And he was like, no, I am going to submit this man. Because anyone can knock
multiple time. multiple-time Abu Dhabi Combat Club world champion who's been tapping out people in like 90 seconds in MMA, getting submitted in the second round by Fluffy Hernandez.
And it felt like he was about to get a 90-second submission victory again.
I thought it was over.
It was over. I was like, all right, cool.
Amazing.
Go on, and then I'll have to look over. I'm like, what? Fight's still going?
Amazing.
Great fight.
That was Fluffy landed that Holly Holm head kick, too. As soon as she, like, got up, he had it again, landed it, and he just ate it.
He pushed Vieira off to give him distance and threw that head kick, and it landed. Vieira.
The contact.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, but no. But what do you think about Vieira? I think I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's a learning experience, and he's clearly a tough dude. But I don't know if he can stay at 85. Yeah.
He might be the new shoe face. He might be the new shoe face. That's all I'm gonna say.
It was just first L time for him. I mean, it just happens.
It happens.
He's gonna learn a ton that he's just not gonna be able to just submit everybody in 90 seconds. It's just not going to work that way. Muhammad Lima fight John and Joe said the fighters are not supposed to wear contacts. Is that true? I would say yes. It's not true.
You
can wear contacts. No,
it has to be. There's no way. Yeah, because,
you absolutely
can. How can you take a punch wearing a contact?
Do people do it all the time?
People punched. Wear them.
Yeah.
People wear them, getting punched in a fight wearing contact. That doesn't seem smart.
Yeah. But if your contact pops out during a fight, you can't like put a new one. You got to fight with whatever.
What if your contact pops in to your eyeball when you get punched?
No, fighters have contacts all the time.
I don't think they're supposed to.
No, it's
the question is are they supposed to? I don't think they're supposed to. I'll have to look this up, but I'll look it up right now. I'll look it up right now. We have the power of the internet. Let's look this up.
Yeah.
Look this up.
Yeah, doesn't seem like the best idea.
As you want, but I really don't think you're allowed to.
That would mean a lot of fighters fight with contacts. I know this, but.
Oh, no. I have unreliable sources verifying this. This is from. I'm not even going to name the website because I don't even know if it's. I think they said it depends on the. This is a blog post. It says, depends on the commission. And I think they said most commissions do allow this. So there's a lot of, I should credit this person. Sorry, this is a MMA for the workingman.com has wrote a person. So you can guys look, if you Google MMA contact lessons, this is one of the first things that'll come up. It's a very thorough, I won't bore you guys by reading it now, but it's a very thorough look apparently. And I just skimming it. It does appear to say most, it does depend on commissions. Most commissions do allow this. So Casey is not a liar. Right. Not about this particular topic.
Don't paint me with broad strokes.
I'm against it. Not in my fight league. I'll allow groin kicks and eye gouges, but not putting little shards of glass in it.
No. Well, that would mean anyone without 20/20 vision essentially like would can't fight or they.
Oh, you blur. You just see the blur.
You the Roxanne Modafari when she's like. I think that's my opponent across the cage. I was like, I'll find out soon enough.
This is true.
That's my favorite part of our Roxy fights, though. As soon as she starts, she's like, who is that?
Yeah. Fair enough.
And she just comes flying at people.
Clearly, I'm not a contact lens wearer. I've never worn a contact, so you can tell that I have no grasp for how inconvenient they are.
All right. More questions. A lot of...
let's find like the best one.
Oh, this is okay. This is the best one. It's A1. hold on, I got it.
I sound like Perry complimenting Bilal. So I don't know. Maybe it's a possibility, but
no.
Bilal
needs to have the opponent.
Hashtag.
Sorry.
No.
Okay, what was this about? I did not see the post fight interview with Usman. Mm-hmm. But is this something I heard?
Was crying?
Is that
was he crying?
I didn't see it.
I watched. I don't think he was crying. He might have been emotional, or he's just, I don't know, being, maybe he was just exhausted. There were tears of fatigue. I don't know. Honestly, I didn't see, did not notice the crying. Sorry. It's Karal. Yeah, we cannot comment on something we didn't see. I see someone mentioned that Benson used to fight with a toothpick. Yeah, that wasn't good either. I don't know.
No, okay. That was definitely
banned. Yeah, that was definitely banned. Yeah.
Yeah, that still might be the craziest thing
I just
ever.
Saw that. Do you guys? Of course we do.
Of course, yeah, because the rules.
Go to MMAfighting.com and just put in our search bar, BKFC. There's a lot of BKFC coverage.
Dude, did you not see the interview with the biggest star of that card last weekend? Are you kidding me? We interviewed Bret Hart.
I felt it.
What was the headline? What was the headline of the last Bret Hart story, Mike?
Oh, God. I thought she was just about Jenny Savage. I thought it was some random ass prostitute. Oh yeah,
I thought it was some random ass prostitute. BKFC. Oh, so good.
I like it.
That was a fun card.
Okay. I'm gonna concentrate on this card because I want to talk about Bare Knuckle, but we just
I know, right? That's a whole other hour if we want to start talking about Bare Knuckle.
All right, let's get one more.
One more after this. Let me find.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't even understand this. Go ahead, Mike. Read this out.
Did I not read it right?
Barbara looked technically outclassed by Grasso. Can they make her fight Valentina so that us haters can see us destroyed properly?
I shouldn't put that one out there. I don't know what that one means.
I don't know if he's talking about Grasso or Barbara. That's what's confusing. But thank you for the question.
Yeah, I think this is someone that wanted to see Barber like kind of sacrificed for his enjoyment. I could be wrong.
But why? What a strange.
Rude.
Again,
by the way,
is this guy suggesting that Barber should fight for the title next?
I don't know. It's confusing. But while you bring up the last question, I'll just say, guys, people, don't give up on Barber yet. She's 22 years old. Like I said, if they give her the right opponents. And let's keep in mind, Grasso came in as like a 23, 24-year-old, and she also struggled early. Can you imagine if people had counted out Grasso after some of her early losses? Like, I don't understand how people so quickly are just she's done.
That really bothered me. Yeah.
Right? And now Grasso clearly is matured, is entering her athletic prime, has rounded out her game. Why can't Barbara do the same thing? Why are people so quick to say now Barbara can't? I get it. Barbara created kind of these elevated expectations for herself, but put that aside, she's very much in the same place where Grasso was 5 years ago. So I don't know. I don't understand why people
She won that third round. She did everything she was supposed to do. I mean, and she did everything she was supposed to do for a fighter when they know they're losing a fight. You know, you go out on your shield, you know, like, you know, kill or be killed. And she knew she was down two rounds, and she was just throwing bombs in that third round. And I was like, and I was watching, I was like, dude, like, Barbara's going for it. Now I was also going, there's no way she can keep up that energy for 5 minutes, bro. And obviously, you know, you kind of saw Barbara's energy kind of go up and down in that third round, but she clearly she still won the round. And Grasso was still mature enough and kept her poised and was able to, you know, just be smart and not get clocked with any of those brawling looping hooks. But Barbara's still awesome. She's like, I don't get it. People are stupid. That's just I'm gonna say it.
we had a lot of good third round kind of before. Julian Marquez, Kraus telling him in not so kind words, get your ass in there and get that finish because you're gonna lose. And he just went for it. So we saw a lot of that today, a lot of good third round performances, and maybe like the best set of middleweight fights I've ever seen. I know that sounds strange, but people don't know. There's kind of a running joke in the MMA community that middleweight's tends to be a bit of a middling division, doesn't always put on the best fights, but all three middleweight fights today, excellent, excellent, great time.
Good stuff. But yeah. But just kind of wrapping on the Barber thing, like I picked Alexa Grasso in this fight because of the experiences she had in fights like this in the past. So like 2 years from now, when Barber's fighting like an up and coming contender and she's kind of rolling a little bit, we're going to look back on that fight as a reason why we picked Macy Barber to beat the next prospect. Sometimes you need fights like that.
Yeah, we're looking a few years now, we're looking at Barber's record and we're going to like, oh, she's only lost to Roxanne Modafferi, who was an elite 25er at the time, and Alexa Grasso, who fought for the title. I don't know. Something, you know. So, it's ridiculous.
For sure.
What do we got? What's the closer?
What's the wrap up?
What's the wrap up? Give me a good one, kids. I don't want to talk about that. All right, here we go. Last one. I've seen this a couple of times.
Anyone want to see Usman come up to challenge Izzy?
I mean, yeah, sure. Sure. Do I think that's a realistic option and it's going to happen anytime in the next, like, year? Highly doubtful. Highly doubtful. Of course, obviously, you know, Adesanya is going up for to 205, so he's got his own business up there. He's probably going to try, should he beat Blachowicz, he'll try to angle that into a John Jones fight. Even when he comes back to 185, there's actually a lot of good 185ers by then that'll probably be in position for Teleshot. And he said he wants to build a legacy at 185. He would not say no, you know, but it's just there's a lot of other dominoes that need to fall right now. So, yeah, I want to see it. Within the next year, I can't imagine it coming around.
I'd love to see it. There's just too much going on right now. Like we said, welterweight just needs to move. Yeah, need a lot of movement. There's unanswered questions. And I think for this to even be a realistic thing, Blachowicz has to win on March 6th. If Izzy wins, I don't think we're going to see it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Also, regardless of the Izzy going, just say if Izzy was just normal, just a champ. Usman, even whoever the 85 title holder happens to be, I just think Usman he won't do that jump until it is basically official that Usman is the greatest welterweight in the UFC history or even MMA history. Until that happens. There's no reason for him to go up. And right now, Usman's in the discussion, you know, now, we're saying GSP's name in the same breath as Usman now. And pretty soon, if Usman gets a couple more solid big wins, who knows? Maybe we'll be like, oh man, GSP was, you know, he was great, but then Usman came and that he kind of changed the game. So, I don't know.
That jab you showed off in that fight today, I'll tell you, it reminded me a little bit of us GSP Kozchek too. You know, kind of that quantum leap in striking that these champions are somehow able to make even this far into their careers. There were shades of GSP, a lot of GSP talk, and you know what? It doesn't sound crazy.
I got shades of Khabib in the sense that Khabib kind of, when he came into the UFC originally, he was this grappling monster. He would dominate you on the ground, but you know, you would lose a solid, he would win 30-26 every time pretty much. But then he started finishing guys and finishing him quick and finishing him bad. And maybe Usman's kind of getting to that point too, where, you know, he had all these solid decision victories, dominant decision victories. But now he is, who knows, if he can really turn that corner, turn that other corner, I don't know what you want to say, but where he's actually finishing A-level welterweights, man, I think that's what he's going to need for people to, you know, go past those GSP comparisons. Because GSP, lots of solid wins, obviously. But, you know, if you actually go back and watch his fights, as far as pure excitement, take away all the drama, you know, and his, you know, I don't like your performance, all that stuff, you know. You know, GSP's fights were kind of, you know, workmanlike. But let's see what Usman can do.
Yeah. But Javon, thank you.
Yeah. Usman is a freak. That guy is a freak. If you haven't, listened to it or watched it, when he was on the Joe Rogan Experience and he talked about all the issues he has with his knees and his back and all this stuff, he said there's most times in his life, where he can't even walk up the up or down the stairs, frontwards, he has to do it backwards because his knees are that banged up. It's crazy to hear him tell the story. You're just oh my God, how do you even fight when your knees are like this? He's got to walk, he can only walk forwards. He's walking on his lawn. Every other time, when he's on hard surfaces, he has to walk backwards to keep his knees in check. It's crazy. Go back and watch that interview. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts.
Did I ever tell you I knew Kamaru before he actually fought MMA, right when he was thinking about transitioning to the pro wrestling, when he was an MMA training partner, but more for the wrestling when he lives in Southern California. And he used to train down at Rain at Mark Munoz's gym with Mayhem Miller and, Pat Cummins, and actually when DC was used to train down here for a little bit, and I got introduced to him, and he was like, oh, and Esther took photos of him right when he was maybe 0-1 or not 0-1, but right when he just had right before he's about to start his pro career. So I haven't talked to Kamaru in a couple of years, because it's just, you know, I haven't seen him, but it was crazy because I was like, oh cool, you're gonna fight, neat, you look pretty athletic. Yeah. That was, and man, who knew?
So in a way, you're responsible for everything that's happened to him since.
I didn't say that, but yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I got you. I know you don't want to say it, Casey, but yeah. I'll say it for you. Yeah, just based on the context of your story, I'm like, sounds like a pretty life-changing experience for Kamaru.
Yeah, Kamaru's like, you know,
that's my takeaway.
I'm thinking about going to real estate, getting my real estate license, you know, some yeah. houses, you know, you can, you know, flip them and everything. I'm like, I don't know, bro. You got a good double
league. You look pretty tough.
You look pretty tough, man. I saw you doing some pull-ups in the back, man. You look strong.
Wow, amazing. Origin story. I never knew. Yeah. Never knew.
Yeah, so it was like, but like, much like when I met DC before he turned pro too.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, you're just some chubby dude on a treadmill. Like, and that's all I thought of him. And then everyone kept saying, oh, who's this Dan? They kept calling him Daniel the Olympian. I'm like, who's Daniel? Where's this Olympic wrestler? And like, he's like literally right in front of me. Like,
You asked him. Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for Daniel Cormier, the Olympic wrestler. Casey, the Forrest Gump of modern MMA.
Yes. But yeah, listen, when you're doing what Usman's doing, you got options, and now we're starting to talk about these, like, you know, dual champ type situations. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. This, we didn't get this after UFC 251, that's for damn sure. But we're getting it after this card. So good on him. And we will see what happens with him as we nod our way through the end of this post fight show. UFC 258 is in the books. AK and I are back tomorrow. So look for that on the podcast network for On to the Next One. All the matchmaking stuff that you want to know about, we got you covered. And you can leave your suggestions as well on social media. AK is at Alexander K. Lee. I'm at Mike_JR. Use the hashtag OTTNO and we'll get your suggestions on the show. Casey, AK, I am Mike Keck. Thank you for watching. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.